Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to introduce your moderators for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Sam, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop and My Cancer Circle, a support network for caregivers. And this is a very important program, and it's an issue and a concern of many caregivers of how to get support, and you're going to learn a lot about getting support today on this program. Today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, and it really is because of that collaboration and your interest in this topic that we have so many of you on the call today. We have over 397 participants on the call, and you come from all over the United States, from all different areas of this country, and we also have international participants from Brazil, Canada, Malaysia, Venezuela, and the United Kingdom. So you really come from all over the world, and it's really a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us on this program. Now, today's program is supported by Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals, Inc., and My Cancer Circle is a trademark of Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals, Inc., and we really want to thank them for their support of this program today. Now, I'd like to turn your attention for all the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is information about all of our speakers and, of course, all of our collaborating organizations as resources for you. There also is information about just this whole topic, and there also is an evaluation form, and I would ask you all to take a moment and complete that evaluation form. When you think about it, who but each of you can best tell us the topics that we should be offering going forward? It is the beginning of a new year, and we are planning many, many new programs, and to some extent we take your recommendations very seriously. Indeed, this program, a program for caregivers, is one that has been requested by many of you, so that we try very hard to listen to your requests and to offer the topics that you suggest. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Laurel Northouse. Dr. Northouse is the Mary Lou Willard French Professor of Nursing at the University of Michigan School of Nursing. And Dr. Northouse is an acknowledged expert in the area of caregiving, and she's going to address the role of the caregiver and the benefits of creating a community of support. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Northouse.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, for inviting me to participate today on this important call. I'd like to say a few things about caregiving and then talk briefly about the importance of support. First of all, I want to define who caregivers are so we have a common understanding of the word. Caregivers are people who provide emotional or physical care, or both, to a person with cancer, but they are not paid for the help that they provide. These caregivers are often called either informal caregivers or family caregivers. Those terms are often used interchangeably. And I just want to point out that sometimes people think caregivers are the people who provide physical care, but that's not the case. Caregivers can be anyone who, as I mentioned, provide either physical or emotional support. So let me talk just a little bit about the demands on caregivers. We know that the demands are increasing considerably in recent years. When I first entered the field of nursing, people who were sick generally stayed in the hospital until they were well. And we know that's no longer the case. Many people leave the hospital with drainage tubes, dressings, they're very fatigued, have pain, or they have other troubling symptoms. And they also leave the hospital with little time to adjust to a new diagnosis or to figure out how they're going to manage it. So as a result of their short stays, family caregivers are expected to take on a much greater role than ever before in caring for their loved ones at home. Some caregivers today provide skilled care that only nurses used to do. So you can imagine how the stress can increase on caregivers, knowing the types of care they're expected to provide. Caregivers are expected to provide very high-level care, but one of the problems is they often don't have the information or support that they need in order to do this. I recall that in one study, about 70% of the caregivers reported that they would like more information about the illness and how to manage it. They also said that they wanted more information on how to provide emotional care because they weren't used to dealing with some of these life-threatening illnesses in their loved ones or even the issues related survivorship. So not only do caregivers need help with the physical demands, but also addressing the emotional demands of caregiving. Many caregivers report that they lack the support they need for this stressful experience. And it's common for families and friends to ask patients how they're doing, but it's less common for them to ask the caregiver how they're doing. And at the time, caregivers are often juggling many things in their life. They may be juggling their job or child care. At the same time, they are the primary caregiver. And we know that in this day and age with the economic situation, many people who are caregivers are very worried about their jobs. They're concerned about missing time to provide care, or that they'll be replaced if someone doesn't think they're needed when they're home providing care. So it is a stressful time for caregivers to try to manage the demands they have in their life in addition to the caregiving role. One of the challenges is that many caregivers don't speak up and ask for help when they need it. Some caregivers think that they should be able to provide care without help, and other caregivers worry that if they ask for help or for support themselves, that they'll be taking support away from the patient. So as a result, many caregivers keep quiet about their needs, and they don't ask for help, even though a number of these caregivers can feel overwhelmed. Someone may ask the caregiver, "What help do you need?" And the caregiver may just say, "I'm doing fine. I don't need any help. I'm just doing fine." And they'll kind of brush off this request provision for help from someone else, even though this caregiver may feel overwhelmed. But there are situations, I do want to say, in which caregivers may be doing quite well. The patient may be fairly self-sufficient, and the caregiver may be able to provide without help. So it's not that all caregivers need this very high level of support. But in many situations, such as when the patient is very ill or is getting treatments with many side effects or is in need of ongoing help for a long period of time, then the demands on the caregivers are very high, and the caregivers really do benefit from support from others. But I just want to address for a minute what can happen when caregivers keep quiet about their needs when they are feeling overwhelmed. Well, one of the things that can happen is that the caregivers can get burned out, and they can develop health problems of their own. If this continues, they may be less able to provide, high-level care for the patient. And according to some studies, about half of the caregivers in this day and age have chronic health problems of their own, maybe one or even two chronic health problems, such as arthritis or heart disease. So when caregivers are providing a lot of care, it's common for them to skip their meals and their own health appointments, and as a result of the stress of caregiving, their own health can suffer. So let me just talk for a few minutes about what are the benefits of getting support as a caregiver. Well, in order for caregivers to be effective in the role and to maintain their own help, they need to find ways to obtain support and information from others. And I just want to stress to the audience that it's not a luxury to get support. It is essential that caregivers get the support they need to help them to cope with the stress of caregiving and to maintain high level of care. Some of the benefits we find when caregivers have support or develop a circle of people who can help them is that the caregivers will feel less alone and isolated, sort of at home with no one quite aware of what they're doing. Caregivers may feel less anxious and depressed because they will have someone else that they can share their own worries and fears with. Caregivers may also have more people that can help them with tasks or with errands, and this can help free up the primary caregiver to address more time and attention to their loved one who's ill. And also, with support, caregivers will be able to attend to their own needs and to maintain their own mental and physical well-being. So it's very important for caregivers to obtain the support they need, but they also need to know that sometimes others don't know what kind of support they need, and then we end up in a situation where there's guesswork. So the more that caregivers can be upfront and let others know what their needs are and not feel like they're being a burden to others, the more likely they will get the help to be able to continue to be effective in their role. So let me just turn now back to Dr. Messner as the program continues.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Northouse, for just a wonderful introduction and to the concept and the overview, very informative, of the issues for caregivers and the need for caregivers to both some of the issues that they confront and also their need for support and asking for support and help. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Rosalie Canosa. Ms. Canosa is an oncology social worker, and she is Program Division Director for Cancer Care. And she is going to address the description of My Cancer Circle, a wonderful tool that you can utilize, the steps to get started, and the tour of the website features. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Ms. Canosa.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mesner, for that introduction, and thank you, Laurel, for providing such a wonderful platform describing the many, many roles and responsibilities caregivers are faced with, and for so thoroughly emphasizing the need for caregivers to seek support. Welcome everyone who is joining us today. It's safe to imagine that many participants on this call are here because either you know someone with cancer, or perhaps you know someone who's caring for a person with cancer, or perhaps you're a healthcare professional who might be here to learn how MyCancerCircle.net can help alleviate some of the many responsibilities that caregivers are coping with. Irrespective of whether you're a person coping with cancer or a caregiver or a health professional, you know very, very well how overwhelming caring for someone with cancer can feel, and you understand that cancer really has a profound effect on family members, on friends and others who are close to a person diagnosed with cancer. And oftentimes, people within our support networks want to help, but don't always know what's needed, how to help, what to do. I'm going to take the next segment of this call to introduce you to a wonderful tool, MyCancerCircle.net. It's a free, customizable online tool that brings together all of these supports, friends, families, and volunteers, to support families and caregivers of people living with cancer. MyCancerCircle.net was created by Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals in collaboration with Cancer Care and is powered by Lots of Helping Hands. MyCancerCircle.net coordinates volunteers helping caregivers to take care of all of the tasks they face every day by providing a virtual calendar to organize community of helpers, by connecting members to direct resources provided by Cancer Care that can help those in their role as caregiver, and by providing a private space to share updates and to offer words of encouragement and support. My Cancer Circle is a service to support caregivers and people facing cancer. Caregivers who are taking care of people with cancer have themselves very extensive and varied responsibilities. My Cancer Circle is an online caring community that offers a practical solution to help organize those supports for people struggling with multiple demands related to their cancer diagnosis, or perhaps their cancer treatment, or even managing activities of daily living. What it really does in short form is answer the question, what can I do to help? Because so often people want to help, don't quite know what's needed. But as we all know, when it comes to caregiving for people with cancer, there's always so much to be done. There's never a shortage. And at times, those tasks may be very practical. They might be include things like cooking meals or helping with household chores, perhaps doing the laundry or walking the dog, handling insurance issues, which can be so complex, researching treatments, doing internet searches, paying the bills, providing emotional support, or they might be perhaps childcare-related needs, such as taking care of family members or picking up children from school. I'm sure you can think of so many more tasks that need to be completed. Fortunately, it really only takes a few short minutes to set up a community. Users have the option to allow one coordinator to oversee the community, or to identify several coordinators who are then assigned to manage specific tasks. We'll look at this in more detail, but to give you an example, one coordinator might organize activities around medical appointments, while another might handle communication-related tasks, such as coordinating emails and providing updates to a group. Another coordinator still might be adept at locating resources and information and connecting caregivers with those resources. During my presentation, I'm going to take you through a tour of my cancer circle to see just how these needs can be managed by a community of volunteers. Anyone with any interest can create a My Cancer Circle community, but most often it is a caregiver or close friend of the family. My Cancer Circle is really easy for people to use and to access. The calendar is color-coordinated to clearly flag where there is a need, when and to what individual a task may be assigned, and when that task or need has been met. It provides reminders to people very conveniently who have committed to tasks and links directly to cancer care services, which include financial assistance, counseling, support groups, or education workshops. In this demonstration today, I'll take you through the steps of creating the community, inviting members, listing activities, organizing those activities into groups, and posting to the message board. To start, it's important to know that when someone creates a My Cancer Circle community, it is private. As you can see from the Getting Started slide here, the information provided is only accessible by you and the members who were invited to join. A privacy statement can be found under the Get Started tab. It really only takes four short steps to create a My Cancer Circle community. First, getting started. Second, inviting members. Third, creating groups. And fourth, adding activities. To begin, click on the Get Started tab at the top of the page that you see here. Once you do that, you'll be prompted to fill out the Create Your Community Circle form with information about you and about your community. You're free to give your community any name you'd like. In this instance, I've called this one Rosalie's Helping Hands. The purpose for My Cancer Circle communities is caregiving, so that's the option we'll see. At the bottom of the page, in the center, you'll see a Create My Community website button. Once you click that, you'll see a message asking you to check your inbox, where you'll find a confirmation email from lotsofhelpinghands.com with a link embedded into your new community, as well as some tips to get you started. After you click that link in your email, you'll see the home page of your new community. This is where you'll find the help calendar. We'll learn how to build your community by inviting members, and then we'll view a help calendar with a few entries that volunteers can sign on to help with. But to do that, we'll visit the next slide, which shows what you'll see when you click the Administration tab at the top of the page. I'll be referring to the Administration tab and to the contents on this page throughout this presentation, so let's take a closer look at how it is organized and at some of the executive functions contained on this very important page. First of all, you'll notice that it's separated into three large columns. The first is the members column, the middle column is the health calendar, and the third is the community column. The members column is the location where you add members, you create and manage groups, you can send welcome messages to your members, you can view member activities, approve pending members. Once you've invited members, created groups and activities, the options under that middle column there titled Help Calendar will help you create, manage, review, and add activities. The third column, Community, is where you'll be able to send group emails, add announcements, and build other components of your community, like photo albums or journals, for example. It's, I think, helpful to think of the Administration tab as serving the executive function of your community. This is where members, activities, events, and updates are made, and you'll be visiting it often. We'll begin building our community by clicking on the Add Members option on this administration tab, and on the next slide, we'll learn how to start building our community. On this slide, you'll see a table where you will enter the name and email address of everyone you want to add to your community. To the right of each email address, you'll see another column that allows you to designate members to be your community leaders. Community leaders have full access to everything within the community and can appoint coordinators to help. We'll talk a little bit more about community leaders because they do play very important roles. If you find you need to add more members than what's currently shown, you can do so easily by clicking the green Add Another Member link just outside of and below the table. But before we move on, I want to bring to your attention that the executive functions of the administration tab I referred to earlier with the three main columns, that is members, help calendar, and community, can be found on the left-hand part of the screen also and can be easily accessed from these pages. This makes creating, updating, and communicating with members easy and seamless, whatever page you may be on. Now, once you've entered the names and email addresses for everyone who you want to add, you click Save and Continue. And as the next slide shows, you'll receive confirmation that members were added. There will be a message reminding you also that in order to complete the process, you'll need to send your members an email using a convenient template that's been provided. This message from you will notify your members of their community membership with instructions on how to sign in. Conveniently, all of the basic information your members will need to sign up will be taken care of, but you do have the ability to customize your message and to add a personal note, as you can see there on the screen. I think you'll agree the ability to customize your message is really a nice feature. So far, on our four-step process, we've covered getting started and inviting members. So now that we have some members, we'll want to organize them into different groups. On the next slide, we'll talk about creating groups. To create groups, under the members category, on the left-hand executive functions section, you click on Add a Group. Give your group a name and then a description. The group I've created here is in charge of meals. It's the meals group. You select the members that you'd like to be part of this group, and then you'll click Save Changes. You can go on and create another group if you'd like. Other possible groups might be a shopping group, a childcare group, transportation, or perhaps meal preparation. This is truly as individualistic as you are and can be customized to meet your needs, whatever they may be. On the next slide, we'll learn how to add activities to your help calendar. To add activities, you'll need to answer four questions: what, when, where, and who. Turning once again to the left-hand column or from the administration tab, under the help calendar, go to the second choice and click on Add an Activity. For the purpose of the next few slides, let's say we're creating a transportation group. Next, we'll want to indicate what type of activity it is. In this instance, giving rides. You see a list there, a standard list, listing different activities. We're going to click Giving Rides. Then we're going to enter an activity name, which in this instance is Ride to Appointment, a calendar label, which is Ride, and any notes about the activity that we may want to include. Here, we're mentioning that the activity usually takes about 2 hours, depending on the time of day and traffic. So it gives members an idea of what the activity is and how long it's expected to take. The entry we make in the calendar label field will actually be what gets displayed on the large community calendar, so it's really a good idea to keep this brief. We labeled this activity Ride, and that's exactly how it'll appear on the calendar. Then you'll click the continue button, and on the next slide, you'll be prompted to set the activity time and date and to indicate the frequency of the activity. You can choose between never, weekly, or you can customize it to fit your needs. Again, once you've finished with those entries, you'll click continue, and the next slide will ask you to provide information about where this activity takes place. After you've entered this information, click continue, and the next slide takes us to the final step in this process, choosing an activity coordinator, the who in our process. Especially if it's someone other than yourself, you'll want to choose an activity coordinator. Activity coordinators will be notified when members sign up for this particular activity. If you'd like, you can actually select several coordinators to be copied on the emails. Then, of course, you'll want to let members know how long you expect the activity to take, how many volunteers you think you'll need. And once you've completed these entries, click the Continue button. At that point, you'll be offered a chance to edit any information you'd like. And once you're ready, you click Create Activity to put this entry onto your calendar. And on the next slide, you'll see an example of a confirmation message that will be received indicating that indeed the activity has been created, and you can send out an email about this activity to your members. I want to bring to your attention the five subtabs across the page. Do you see those? They are general information, new dates, changes, permissions, and view on calendar. If you click View on Calendar, the next slide will show what your help calendar looks like with the activity listed. The color-coded system actually indicates to you, your coordinators, and your members which needs have been met, if the help is still needed, and offers a snapshot view of the upcoming months as well. So green is help needed, blue needs have been met, and then you see the calendar with the upcoming months. The next slide shows that you can click on the activity from the calendar and be taken to a nice detailed overview of it. On this page, you'll see that there are two large buttons off to the right where you'll be able to sign up for this task or assign this task to another member. On the next slide, the topic is about posting to the message board. The message board is a great place to connect and keep in touch with community members. To post to the message board, you go to the home screen and you click on Message Board. It's pretty nicely labeled. To start a new post, you click on the green Add a Post button on the right-hand side, enter a title, and type in your message. You can post words of encouragement and support, as well as updates and information you want to share with your private community circle. Post it to the message board by clicking Save Changes, and then you'll see a confirmation that the message was indeed posted. You can also post announcements or well wishes, create a photo gallery, and follow links to cancer care and other resources. Well, that takes you through the four steps of creating a MyCancerCircle.net community of support. If you have questions along the way, click the Having Trouble tab for help. From there, you can browse help topics, contact a community coordinator, or send an email to the Lots of Helping Hands Member Support Center. Thanks very much for your attention this afternoon. The next time anyone asks what they can do to help, you'll have all of the information necessary to simply invite them to join your online community so that you can focus on what's important, caring for your loved one with cancer.
Oh, thank you so much, Rosalie. That's such a wonderful, and what a wonderful tip for everybody to know that, because I think for caregivers it's so hard to find help one needs, and this is such a wonderful tool that you've reviewed with everyone. Thank you so much, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And our next speaker is Carly Mesovitz, and Carly is an oncology social worker at Cancer Care. And Carly is going to go over with you the free psychosocial support services offered by Cancer Care, as well as the role of support groups. It's my pleasure to turn the program over to Carly.
Thanks so much, Dr. Messner. It's a pleasure to be part of such an important call. So now that we've heard about the importance of creating a support network when a loved one is diagnosed with cancer and have found out a little bit more about some tools to help increase this network of support, I'd like to talk more about how Cancer Care can be a part of that support network. There are a lot of ways that we can help. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization, and we provide free professional support services to people with cancer, caregivers, and the bereaved. Cancer Care's programs include individual counseling and support groups, education, practical help, and some limited financial assistance. All of our services are delivered by master's level oncology social workers and are all completely free of charge. Oncology social workers are trained in how a diagnosis of cancer affects not only the person who's diagnosed, but his or her family and friends. We're experienced in helping people to manage the emotional, physical, and financial challenges that arise after a loved one's diagnosis. Asking for help by joining a support group or by contacting a social worker for counseling is really a sign of strength. Cancer Care does offer face-to-face groups in our local offices in the New York area, as well as telephone and online groups. These groups offer a really unique opportunity to talk with other caregivers, along with the help of a Cancer Care social worker who will help facilitate the group. Sharing information and a level of understanding with others in similar situations can be a really powerful experience. Group members can also offer encouragement and a sense of community that can provide you with additional support and guidance. And these connections help lessen the isolation that many caregivers experience. At this time, Cancer Care is actively recruiting for several face-to-face caregiver support groups in our offices in the New York and surrounding areas, a telephone support group for caregivers across the country, as well as several caregiver-specific online support groups. If you are interested in participating in one of these support groups, or if you have any questions, you can call us on our toll-free HOPE line at 1-800-813-HOPE or 4673, or visit us on our website at www.cancercare.org. So as you've heard from today's discussion, there are many services out there to help caregivers get access to the support that they really need. And while we might not be able to resolve all of the problems that you face each day, a Cancer Care social worker really provides a listening ear and the ability to counsel you as you navigate your caregiver experience. So many caregivers find this to be a really reassuring and comforting service that can help you feel less alone. So again, please contact us at 1-800-813-HOPE, that's 4673, or log on to our website at www.cancercare.org for more information about our oncology social work support and services. I'd like to thank you all for your attention today and for the opportunity to talk with you all. And I'll go ahead and pass things back to Carolyn.
Oh, thank you so much, Carly. That was just a wonderful presentation and a clear description of all the services that people can access from Cancer Care. Now, we do have time for questions. Actually, we have a lot of time for questions, and I'm going to ask that Sam bring all of our speakers on board, including Dr. Stuart Fleischman, who's founding director of Cancer Support Services, Continuum Cancer Centers of New York, accreditation surveyor, American College of Surgeons, Commission on Cancer. So we're all on board to answer your questions, and Carly, if you could, Sam, if you could explain to everybody how to queue up for questions, and we'll try to take as many of your questions as possible. If we don't get to your question, please call Cancer Care at the end of the program at 1-800-813-HOPE, and I'll review that again with you at the end of the program as well.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen on the phone lines, if you do have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit a question by clicking the Ask a Question box.
OK. Okay, we have some questions. Actually, a number of questions from our participants involving the My Cancer Circle tool. So I'm going to start with the first question from Jane. Do members get reminders about tasks they have committed to? Rosalie, could you address that?
Sure, I'm happy to. Indeed, reminders are sent out to members. They're sent out at regular intervals, 1 month, 1 week, and 1 day before scheduled tasks. So that's designed to, you know, to make this as smooth as possible for everyone.
Excellent, thank you. And another question from Tim, how are community members selected? Rosalie, if you could address that as well.
The process of selecting community members, I think the first thing I'd like to remind everybody and assure everyone that it's really a community that's accessible only to members who have requested to join or have been invited to join. So leaders and designated coordinators can approve new members to join the community, but it is a private community.
And another question from Allison, how is a community leader different than a coordinator? Aren't they all members? Rosalie, if you could address that as well.
That is really an important question. Everyone has a bit of a different role within the community, so let's take a moment to talk about those different roles. A member is defined really as anyone who participates in the community. So a community member may be perhaps a family member who's receiving help or volunteers who are providing support or just anyone who might be interested in following the updates on the website. Each member does have a secure login and a personal password, so it is a private experience. Leaders and coordinators do have different roles and responsibilities, but are also members of the community. The person who initially creates a community is referred to as the community leader. So by default, they're given that title. That person may be the patient, may be the caregiver, perhaps a close friend or a family member. So once the community is actually created, the community leader may and could designate other leaders, and leaders may have multiple people designated as coordinators. Community leaders, what distinguishes community leaders and coordinators from a member is that they have administrative privileges on the site. So a community leader has full access to everything in the community. Most communities have more than one leader, and at times, often, there's someone who's designated to manage the activities related, say, to meals delivery, while another leader or coordinator might be in charge of organizing childcare. Often, the caregiver and the patient are also granted leader or coordinator privileges so that they can easily see who's signing up for what task or to manage various sections within the community. As I said, they have both leaders and coordinators are members. They just have a certain really important administrative privileges. They can add and remove community members. They can add and manage groups of volunteers or designate other members as leaders or coordinators and easily add activities to the help calendar, to name a few of their important functions.
Thank you. And there is a question from Nathan, which I think is a question that comes up a lot on these on a tool like this, and I'm going to ask Rosalie to address this. I don't understand how the announcement section is different than the message board and the well wishes sections, and how do I deal with them? So, Rosalie, could you address that?
Mm-hmm. you know, there are actually so many really useful features in My Cancer Circle, so I'm really glad that this question came up. In addition to the health calendar, which we spent a lot of time focusing on, there are five other subsections within anyone's community. They are announcements, the photo gallery, resources, the message board, and well wishes. And I think the writer is correct to say he's a little confused about it. I'll try to explain the differences here. The announcement section is a convenient place where leaders and designated coordinators can share messages with the entire community. So members, you need privileges in order to post to the announcement section. Examples of postings might include alerts about new volunteer opportunities, health and treatment progress of the patient, or general community updates. The message board is also used to allow posting of messages. The difference is that all members have the ability to post messages on the message board and also to reply to other messages. It's really the best place for members to connect with other members and to generate discussion on relevant topics. The well wishes section is a place to drop a line to say hello or post a inspirational thought or prayer or to maybe let the individual or the family being helped know that you're thinking about them. So that's how some of these things, these sections are different.
Well, thank you. And, of course, that well wishes section means a lot to caregivers or to families to get those messages from everyone. That's so fantastic. Now, another question from Ellen. What happens if someone I invite to join my community is unable to participate? What happens then?
On the rare occasion that that might happen, the important thing to note is that a person doesn't become a member of your community until they actually click on the link in the notification email. So they have to go through a validation process. So they click the link, they validate their email address and choose their password, agree to the terms of use, and then they join your community.
Okay, excellent. Well, that's good to know then. And another question I got the tool from Sarah. Is it possible to be in more than one community?
Actually, it is. There's actually no limit to the number of communities in which you can participate or manage. You use the if you're a member of one or more communities, you use the same email address and the password, so it's really easy to navigate from one community to any other community where you may be a member. And that actually is not so uncommon. Once people experience the tool and share it with others, we do find that they pass the word around and maybe join more than one community.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. This is really helpful in terms of understanding the tool. And now we have some general questions from a question from Sandra, from one of our online participants, really about I'm a long-distance caregiver, and I don't really know all the things I should be doing. And I'm going to ask Laurel if you could address that in terms of just support for the long-distance caregiver and what's out there, what could be done
for
them.
Well, that's a very common experience because there are so many people who are long-distance caregivers, given how mobile we all are, and again, with people seeking jobs in different places of the country. And there's some real challenges, I think, with being a long-distance caregiver. One of the challenges is that others in your social network or work life may not know that you are caregiving for someone who lives at some distance from you. And so I think that some of the distance caregivers don't get the same kind of support as maybe a close community living within one city where everyone knows one another. So it's very important for the distance caregiver to reach out for support, either to people back where the ill person is, or even I think the services that Carly mentioned you have at Cancer Care. Dr. Messner, are very, very helpful to distant caregivers. The other challenge I think distant caregivers face is how to get information. They're not typically going to office visits, or they're not in the hospital seeing health professionals as they come around to visit. So if they can find a way to get the information, and if they're feeling that they're really lacking information, they can call the office and have the health care provider, either maybe the nurse practitioner or social worker or physician, give them an individual call and try to update them on the situation of their loved one. That's assuming that the loved one is willing to have that information shared, of course. But trying to get a direct connection to the health provider is another way to get information. And I think one other stress on distance caregivers that I've seen is the idea of traveling. Often they're not satisfying being at a distance, so they will either, if it's not too far, they will drive over to see their loved one, or they will fly over, and it's this coming back, going back and forth that can be quite fatiguing for a distance caregiver, and also it's difficult for them to maintain their lifestyle or their job back at home. So it is a stress, and to the extent that they're able to get information about the situation, they may feel less of a need to have to go back and forth as much, but it's just one of the realities of distance caregiving is difficult.
And Carly, would you like to address this in terms of our support groups and just the services that we offer?
Absolutely. I agree with Dr. Northaus that long-distance caregiving can bring up a lot of different challenges for caregivers, but I think reaching out for support is a really important way of getting connected, of feeling less isolated. The great thing about cancer care supportive services is that they do cater to individuals across the country. So this allows for people, whether they're caregiving in the home with somebody or from thousands of miles away, to get access to support from others who can really relate, to offer suggestions. And I think another piece of coping with long-distance caregiving is communication, communicating with others about what the caregiver's needs are and what their role looks like. And I think those are all important ways of getting access to support and also coping with the challenges that long-distance caregiving can produce.
And Rosalie, do you want to add as well?
Sure, I'd be happy to add. I think the very challenges that were outlined in responding to this question really speak to and give voice to the importance that a resource like My Cancer Circle can provide. We know that everyone has busy lives and wants to contribute in some way. So it provides a way to communicate to groups of people, so it's a time saver that way. And it also allows people who, because they're distant caregivers and can't provide more of the hands-on, maybe they can provide, they can take on responsibility for some tasks that don't require close proximity, things like doing the research and some of the treatment knowledge and background gathering that often is necessary and important to happen, and so that they can also feel part of the process.
Well, thank you. And Dr. Fleischman, do you want to add anything about both being long-distance caregiver and also could you say a word about that short-distance caregiver who may be in the same community but still far away?
Well, what's common is that caregivers love to try to help and do more and more and more, and that becomes a problem after a while, whether you're in the same community or a long distance away. We generally like to know that we're doing a good job and that we haven't forgotten anything, but it gets pretty tiring after a while. It's really important to have a good perspective on what you actually can do realistically, as well as who you can call for help when you need it.
Excellent. And I'm going to throw this out to everyone, but how do you get that perspective? Because it's often very hard in the midst of caregiving to actually parcel out what you really can do and what you can't do. Carly, do you want to address that in terms of just how do you make those decisions about what's reasonable and what isn't reasonable?
Sure, and I think that's something that takes a lot of time and energy to really think about. Setting limits and boundaries related to caregiving is really essential to ensure that the caregiver is taking good care of themselves and not extending themselves beyond what they can realistically do. Because at the end of the day, you're not going to be a good caregiver to someone else if you're not able to take care of yourself. You know, we say that every day. So I think it takes, like I said, time and energy and having a safe space where you can process that, sometimes through counseling or by connecting with somebody else in a similar situation. Those are the times where somebody can really get a better sense of that perspective and in setting those boundaries.
Oh, thank you so much. And actually, that leads into the next question from Cindy, which is actually, what about feeling stressed out from caregiving, really feeling overly stressed, and how to deal with that? And I wonder if Dr. Fleischman, if you could start with that, and I'll open it to the entire group, but just in terms of the stresses of caregiving, if you could address just coping with that.
Really, the universal answer is yes. Stress, feeling stressed out, as the caller asked, is extremely common amongst caregivers, especially after a long period of time. And in my experience, what I've heard the best, that works best, is that for caregivers to actually give themselves an extra task, which seems kind of backwards, but that extra task is often to spend some time away from caregiving with the proper help to make sure that the patient, him or herself, is safe, but to spend some time away from caregiving doing something else, thinking about something else, or thinking about nothing else, but a little bit of time away. And that seems truly ironic because it adds another stress onto a caregiver that already feels like they can't get enough done in the course of a number of hours in a day. But that seems to be the secret for long-term caregiving. Some people will use that time to go to religious services. Some people will use that time to get something nice done for themselves, to get a haircut or go to the beauty parlor or something like that. But it really, really is important to have that time away from caregiving. And we do know in experience over many years that the health of a caregiver often suffers when they are busy caregiving and they just don't go to the dentist as often as they used to, or go get their mammogram, or do the many things that we have to do for health maintenance, or even eat healthfully because they're on the run. So taking care of oneself seems to be an extra burden, but in the long run is the secret to caregiving over a long period of time and successfully.
Excellent. Thank you. And Laurel, do you want to add something to that?
Well, I agree with Dr. Fleischman with all of the things that he said. I think another way caregivers can manage stress is to try to use exercise, and I know we hear that all the time, try to get exercise, but it's really important when a person such as a caregiver is under stress, and maybe that's just going out for a walk for a half an hour a couple of times a week, or maybe being part of a fitness center, and even though they may not have time, it's really something to help them manage the stress of illness. A couple other things come to mind. One is a coping strategy, trying to use active problem-solving coping rather than avoidance. Sometimes when people are under stress, they just want to avoid the situation, avoid the worry that they have, and so they can sort of put their head in the sand and not try to get answers or solve problems. And in the long run, that doesn't help because it catches up with them. And so the more the people can try not to engage in an avoidance or denial, but try to get the answers they need so they know what's happening, and it helps to reduce uncertainty, I think that's also very important. And one other thing, it's important, I believe, for caregivers to try to work together. Let's say there's maybe the primary caregiver and then a couple other caregivers that are in the wings to help out. The more that group of caregivers can work as a team to say, we are in this together, kind of a we-ness, I think they then will get support from one another rather than thinking that it all falls on one person.
Excellent. That's great. Thank you. And Rosalie, do you want to say, Ms. Canosa, do you want to add to that as well?
Well, I totally agree. I think that so much of what we do here at Cancer Care is just about helping people, one, pause, take a breath and realize that they are, you know, entitled to time for themselves. And as Dr. Fleischman and Carly said earlier, doing that really is central. I mean, the caregivers are an extension of the medical system. When, you know, Laurel first started our talk today, she spoke about how demands are increasing, there are shorter hospital stays, and that just adds to the burden and responsibilities that caregivers have. So it really is they become really an extension of the medical community, and they are the safety net for patients and actually for society at large. If you really think about, you know, they're stepping in to a place where there used to be, you know, help from hands-on nurses, and so it really does become so important to give and allow caregivers time to carve out some space for themselves.
Excellent, thank you. And Carly, would you like to add anything or?
Yeah, you know, I just echo what everyone else has said about the importance of self-care. And I think one of the biggest things that we can do as professionals is to encourage caregivers to give themselves permission to do these things that will make them feel good, because they're working really hard to be caregivers and to just get through the days sometimes, that putting themselves to bed 20 minutes earlier or going for a long walk, those can be really restorative and really important. And sometimes it takes the caregiver giving themselves permission to do those things.
Well, thank you. And I want to thank all of our speakers. You've just really been extraordinary. This has been an extraordinary program on caregiving and on My Cancer Circle, and it's a wonderful tool for all of you. And I also want to thank all of you who've actually sent us so many of your comments and questions online in terms of the chat feature, and also those of you who've emailed us your questions as well. I do want to remind you that this is a one-hour program, and that in planning a program like this, we know that you all have many needs that go far beyond the scope of 1 hour. And so I do want to remind all of you that you do have access to all the services of cancer care by simply calling us at 1-800-813-HOPE. And all of our social workers are here to take your questions and concerns. If you didn't get to ask a question, if you're interested in joining one of our groups, please do call us if you'd like to talk with one of our social workers. If you need some practical or financial assistance, we're here to help you. We have many other education programs coming up and materials as well that you can access from Cancer Care. Most importantly, as we conclude our program today, I don't want anyone to feel that you're alone in coping with being a caregiver, in coping with cancer. I want you to know that you're part of this community of support, and we're here to help you. I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This does conclude today's workshop. You may disconnect. Everyone, have a wonderful day.